Good morning. This is Tracy Morgan, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for May 16th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, this is episode number 150 of Too Much Scrolling.
150 episodes?
150 weeks in a row, you and I have sat down and made this show happen. We have not skipped a single week in 150 weeks.
Well, that's the exciting part, is that we have to show up every week.
Every week. And that means, so we've struggled.
The earth is still around. That means we have to show up. And you're right. It can be challenging.
We have struggled. There have been weeks where we've gone, man, there's too many lacrosse games. We've got too many things that we have to get done. How the heck are we going to do this stupid hobby in the basement? We got it done. Good job, Chip.
Oh, and thanks for our listeners for listening to us.
Thank you to everybody who's out there listening.
Those numbers keep going up. So, you know, you can do us a favor and share us with a friend.
Oh, yeah. Tell all your friends about Too Much Scrolling. You don't have to just see my bumper sticker while I'm driving around town that says that I'm listening to Too Much Scrolling. You can get a bumper sticker of your own. I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you now. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I got a chance to sit down together and watch Batman and Bill. This is the documentary. It's a Hulu original documentary about the uncredited co-creator of Batman. His name is Bill Finger, and most people haven't heard of him.
Now, this is a really interesting film, sort of documentary, and it really was a passion for a gentleman that you met a year or so ago.
That's right. Mark Tyler Nobleman is the author who did all the detective work to find out about Bill Finger, this mystery that was hiding in plain sight that we did not know about. I got a chance to talk to him last year, and in our show notes, you can go back to last year, time travel, and find out all the things that he had to say to me on this. But I really recommend this documentary. It goes more in depth on what he did for years in this analysis of this.
And let's set this up. So Batman is a creation, and an incredibly profitable creation for Warner Brothers and DC Comics, the companies that own this, the rights to this character.
Right.
If I remember properly, and I'm going from my memory, Batman is worth about $700 million a year.
Every year.
To Warner Brothers.
Right now.
I mean, it's an incredibly valuable property. The only comic book property that is worth more is Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is worth over $1 billion a year to Disney and Marvel. So this documentary changed my feelings on a number of things. I initially had thought that Bob Kane, the person who is told to be the creator of Batman and is listed as a creator on all the works.
He's gotten all the credit for all this time since 1939.
Initially, I thought he was that Bill Finger's job was a work-for-hire position. But it turns out it was not. It was a handshake agreement, and Bob Kane was just the person who negotiated with DC. So Batman came out after Superman. Superman was a big hit. National Periodicals, which is DC Comics, wanted another property. Bob Kane is very much a Stan Lee type of character.
True believers.
That's right. He enjoys being noticed.
Yes, he did.
When I say he's a salesman, he is a performer.
Correct.
So Marvel Comics ended up growing because, you know, you have this extrovert, and Stan Lee was this beautiful guy that was just like, all right, all my fans, all you great people.
Excelsior!
He built this community.
Yes.
Well, Bob Kane was just the same type of gentleman. He was just before Stan Lee. And instead of promoting the Hulk and the Avengers and Captain America, he basically just worked with Batman and Batman characters. Well, behind this, Bill Finger was the guy who wrote this. He created the Joker and the Riddler and Catwoman and, you know,
Batmobile, the Batcave, the costume. There's so many things that Bill Finger was directly responsible for creating.
And he was ultimately a co-creator. It it wasn't a work for hire type of position.
Right.
My initial thought also changed because I kept thinking of other creators who had similar situations. Now, Jack Kirby basically took this dying company that became Marvel Comics, and he created the Fantastic Four, and he created the Avengers, and he created the Hulk. You know, Marvel is a billion-dollar company, over a billion-dollar company right now. And the only character he didn't create was Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Lee said, I created Spider-Man. But we have another person who was a guy named Steve Ditko, mm-hmm. who was a co-creator of Spider-Man. Steve Ditko created Spider-Man. He created the girlfriend. He created the bad guys mm-hmm. that he fought. And Steve Ditko was in a similar position that Bill Finger, but Steve Ditko recognized earlier than Bill Finger.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, the reading of Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand also had a profound impact on how Steve Ditko viewed the world. It was black and white. There's no in between. It's a good guy or a bad guy. We either have a working relationship or we don't have a working relationship. And ultimately, Ditko just abandoned the Spider-Man character. And there are rumors right now that he still has all these pages from these early Spider-Man comics back in the 60s that he basically is taking like scissors and cutting them up and just doing stuff like that.
Wow.
So because his thought was that I created this world, this billion-dollar character. I'm not profiting from it. I'm not receiving proper money for this. And Marvel could say, well, you're a work for hire.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel could say all this other stuff. But the reality was Spider-Man wouldn't be the character he is today without Ditko creating a foundation for him. And Bill Finger is in a similar boat, but from a much earlier time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll end it with this. We reviewed a Brian Michael Bendis book maybe a year ago. Brian Michael Bendis is a comic book writer
mm-hmm.
who basically wrote a book about how to write and how to create contracts with other creative people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, am I an owner of this? Am I a work for hire for this? If this character goes beyond something that we've imagined, you know, what percentage do I get from the take? You know, these are all things that we want to have up front. An attorney would say, but, you know, in the creative process, this is not always something that somebody follows through. What do you think?
This documentary is a great exploration of all of that stuff, all of the back office contractual pieces of this conversation. And it's this wonderful story about Mark Tyler Nobleman, this author who goes on this investigation.
He's a detective.
He is a detective. And the parallels that he draws in this documentary between himself being the detective and Batman being the ultimate detective,
mm-hmm.
it is really a great documentary. He's a great guy. I loved sitting down and talking with him. His book is called Bill the Boy Wonder. It explores these ideas on a child level. This is a book designed for children.
But this documentary is not, I mean, it's a family type of documentary.
It's a perfectly fine family documentary.
And very touching, especially when we get to the big reveal was finding Bill Finger's granddaughter.
Right.
Which allowed the family
mm-hmm.
to ultimately get part of the claim of this character.
To get the credit that Bill deserves.
So now it says, instead of created by Bob Kane, or by Bob Kane, it says Bob Kane with Bill Finger.
On anything that happens with Batman from now on. They negotiated it to that point. And that is a really good story in the documentary. I love documentaries that can tell a great story like that.
There may be some settlement in there too, but we didn't get that far.
They didn't go into that. They very clearly state that they are not in it for the money, but
it's a $700 million.
There's some
product.
Money there
a
to
year,
be
baby.
To
a
be
year.
Sent around. I really recommend this. It's on Hulu. It's called Batman and Bill. It's a documentary. If you love documentaries, if you love Batman, mm-hmm. you should know about Bill Finger.
And through our notes, you can get a free month or two of Hulu.
I believe it's a free month of Hulu. You can go to our show notes and check that out. You can go to our website, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, and pick up Mark Tyler Nobleman's books too. He's got 75 books that he's written.
So, Steve, tell me something that was really fascinating this week.
Doctor Who. Doctor Who is amazing. Have I told you the good news of Doctor Who yet? Let me explain to you.
He's going
to
spread the gospel
about
of
the
who.
Religion that is Doctor Who. This week's episode of Doctor Who. We don't talk about Doctor Who every week because I would just talk about Doctor Who and MST3K if you let me. But every once in a while, something special happens. This week on Doctor Who, there was an episode called Knock Knock. This is a haunted house, scary monster episode. They do different types of episodes. This one is special because they used something called binaural audio. This is a new method, it's about 5 years old, of getting 3D sound out of the two stereo speakers in, let's say, headphones. And you can be a part of the picture in a new way because you are sensing not sound from the left and right, but left, right, front, back, up, and down. I still don't know how they do that.
It's still, it's kind of like a movie experience, mm-hmm. But, you know, through the television. Now, we have surround sound system. We've had Dolby and stuff like that. This is different.
Right, because surround sound relies on multiple speakers in multiple parts of your room. So you're hearing different sounds coming from the different corners of your room. This is two ears, two headphones. You are hearing sounds from what seem to be above you and below you.
Now, my assumption, this is working well with sound bars and mm-hmm. things like that, too. So, this was fascinating. If you go through our notes and you click through, you can get a sample of that. You will hear the sounds behind you. You'll hear above you, below you, to your left and right, and they're all separate. Unbelievable. This is fascinating.
Adds to the dramatic tension of a horror movie style episode like this so well.
I want to create a haunted house now. And I want to use this.
Yes. I want to create a virtual reality haunted house. This is the technology that we will be using for virtual reality. Adding that one extra sense when you're seeing something that's not real and hearing it from all sides, mm-hmm. it adds to the experience.
What's opening this week, Steve?
Speaking of horror movies, Alien Covenant is coming out.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that is a big movie.
Yes.
There's a movie for everybody this week. Yes. There's like 1,000 movies opening up. And this is the biggest one.
I agree.
And Alien, this is Ridley Scott.
Yes. Do you love Alien and Aliens, the originals?
This is...
I love these movies.
All right, so this is not my favorite, but it's not like I dislike it. So, you know, you don't have to twist my arm and say, hey, go watch this. Every one of them I find fascinating.
Well, I wouldn't go with every one of them. There's some turkeys in there. But the first two, Alien and Aliens, mm-hmm. are horror sci-fi, where it's science fiction. They're on a spaceship, and then a monster arrives, and the monster is horrible. Like, the things that are happening to these people are horrific. That's what I'm seeing in the trailer for Alien Covenant, is scary sci-fi.
So what if you were a teen girl?
I would not know what to do with myself, but I would go see the movie Everything, Everything.
This would be something that my daughters would definitely eat up. And when I saw the trailer for this, I said, oh, this was aimed towards my daughter.
Yes, a teenage girl is trapped in her house because she's allergic to everything.
But a boy moves next door.
A handsome boy moves in next door, and she sees him through the window, and they start a texting conversation, and they put signs on the glass to communicate with each other, and then she decides to leave the house.
Now, this story was told last year with a kid who lived on Mars. And had to come to the Earth.
Yes.
And he couldn't live in the atmosphere. Now, this is the opposite. She cannot live outside of her home.
It's the same story. You are absolutely right. This is exactly the same story.
So bring your tissues. This is definitely going to be very touching.
Or you can go next door and watch The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul.
Now, this is a recast version of those movies.
Right. Those kids aged out of the production, so they had to find new kids.
That's right. But this is definitely the family film.
Yes.
My kids have eaten up all the old other ones.
I love those. I love The Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
They're like the old Disney films we used to watch when we were kids.
Yes. They are very much that live action, silly and fun and nothing negative. Well,
and Wimpy Kid doesn't always make the highest of decisions.
Right.
He has to live with
the consequences.
Oh, yes, he does.
This one looks good. I will go see that one. There is a movie called Wakefield. This is an independent. Wow. Interesting concept on this one.
A man has a nervous breakdown.
in a house that is not his own because he decides that he's just going to leave his life and go live in the attic of the house across the street.
Well, you can imagine a very stressful job. I have a stressful job at times. Yeah, and
I do too,
and,
sort of.
Yeah, but you know, the idea of some point breaking down and, mm-hmm. and escaping just for a little bit of time to get yourself in order. This seems to be, I'm sure this a lot of people can relate to this. Like, just give me a few weeks
just
to kind
give
of
give me a week. I yes. need a vacation. This is Bryan Cranston. That's why I was doing my Bryan Cranston voice, by the way. Bryan Cranston is one of the great actors working right now. Jennifer Garner plays his wife. There's Beverly D'Angelo in there, so I'm sure that there's a connection to vacation.
Now, the next movie we don't know. That's right. This next movie we don't know if it's going to be a thriller or a horror movie.
The trailer certainly points to the possibility that this is a horror film, but I think it might just be a suspense thriller. It's called The Survivalist. It's about a guy who's living his life in the woods for the last 7 years alone.
But it seems like maybe something had happened to the Earth.
Something happened to humanity.
Dystopian past and stuff like that.
And maybe they'll cover that and maybe they won't. The trailer just gleams over it.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, right. the whole point of it is that's the reality is that people are starving. Mm-hmm. He lives in the woods. He's a survivalist by himself. And then he has a couple of young ladies who stop by.
Mm-hmm. And nothing like Last Man on Earth on Fox. That's a comedy. But this looks frightening, at least, if not horrific.
Well, let's just say that you are a person who loves documentaries and wants to get deep into one.
And you know that I am. We love documentaries here on Too Much Scrolling. That's why we watched Batman and Bill this morning. But Abacus, Small Enough to Go to Jail, is another documentary that's coming out.
This is fascinating. This is concerning the 2007-2008 market meltdown and the banks that were part of that. And no, Chase is still around, even though they were bailed out. And
because they were too big to fail, if you remember that phrase.
Okay, and then we have Citibank, obviously still around. First Union merged into Wells Fargo. So, you know, all the investigations by the Fed, they decide they're going to take action on this. And what do we go? We go through with this small Chinese bank in New York City, the one that had a stellar reputation until this, until whatever happened. But they had to make an example out of somebody, Steve. Yep. And so this is the story about this bank that was basically created because Chinese people didn't have somebody lending them money. So this guy made a bank for it, and it had a stellar reputation until this event happened. And were they the scapegoat of the big banks, or did something really go bad? We're going to explore this. And all you can do is look at and just smile and watch it. Anyway, I have interest in seeing this.
And getting more information about the topic that you're looking for is important. And finding those documentaries that share those ideas, this looks like a good one.
So an artistic achievement, the highest level. Steve, is there something that we could potentially watch that would be on that level?
Yeah, I don't know where you find these. You found a movie called Space Babes from Outer Space. This seems to be one of those movies that we would find on Cinemax late at night in the 1980s.
Skinemax? Did you say Cinemax?
No,
this is sort of like ripe for rip tracks, like the week it opens.
Yeah, this is a bad sci-fi movie.
All right, so it looks like it... It really does. Like a mixture of Skinemax and 50s or 60s, like really bad films. We've got three young ladies who are dressed in tight clothing, who seem to have attributes that many young men enjoy.
They're aliens.
Of course.
That's what young men
flying
enjoy.
Flying a spaceship that's
shaped a certain way.
Landing on Earth. Uh-huh. And, of course, where do they land, Steve? Probably in the Earth strip bar, because it has to take place there, of course.
That's probably a good 40 minutes of this film.
This movie looks awful.
Yes.
But somehow...
You're going to see it.
You know, probably not. But if it was somewhere that was on, I would watch a couple minutes of it because it just looks so designed poorly. And it's meant to be played like this.
Yes, I agree with you there. I think that they were trying to make a silly 80s-like Cinemax film.
If you were a 14 or 15-year-old boy, you probably would find a lot of joy in this film. You probably could have written this film.
And it seems like maybe that's exactly what happened here. Maybe this is written by my son. Son, have you been writing terrible films? Space Babes from Outer Space. It has the word space in it twice.
So now that we've hit the highest point, Steve, is there anything else that we should be aware of this week?
It's happening again.
What? I don't even get that. What does
you
that
don't
mean?
Even get that reference.
What does that mean?
Twin Peaks Season 3 is premiering Sunday night, late Sunday night on Showtime. To say that I'm excited for this return is an understatement.
Steve posted this picture from when he was a young man.
1991.
And he looks just like his oldest son.
Yes.
Or his oldest son looks just like him.
Yes.
And his buddies have got this big poster they put together,
uh-huh.
and all the things you can, Doctor Who, uh-huh. Star Wars, whatever, and Twin Peaks uh-huh. is front and center on this.
That is my friend Rob. Rob's been on the show a couple of times. He's our Twin Peaks expert. He's going to be with us for the panel discussion after this premieres on the 21st. We're going to get a panel together, just like we did for MST3K, just like we did for Doctor Who. We're going to discuss this sometime later next week after we have time to digest it a little bit, because David Lynch takes time.
David Lynch, first, is weird. It's got to be weird. It's got strange music, strange settings.
Odd things are happening that you are not expecting to happen. I don't know what's going to happen in season 3. I'm trying to stay away from spoilers.
Artistic television.
Oh, yes.
On the grand scale.
And especially now on Showtime, because the first two seasons were on ABC in the early 90s, and they were stifled by what they could and couldn't do through the censorship. On Showtime, they can do anything.
Well, on the New York Times, to prepare for this, was running a column where they were breaking down season one and season two. They were breaking down episode by episode.
Yeah.
And you also have been preparing for this,
yes,
by listening to a podcast.
That's right. I have completed my rewatch of season one and two, along with Tom Merritt and Ron Richards, on the Damn Fine podcast. They took on themselves rewatching every episode and talking about it episode by episode. I also rewatched along with them, and I'm ready.
All right. So they're going to release these shows 1 week at a time.
One at a time.
And how many episodes are part of the
There are 18. That was part of the contract dispute. David Lynch said, I'm not going to do it at one point because Showtime wanted 9 episodes. He said, okay, then I'm not going to do it. He talked them into 18 episodes.
Well, this could really blow up in a very wonderful way.
Absolutely.
Very similar to Mystery Science Theater, very similar to Doctor Who, mm-hmm. or Star Wars. There's a huge following on this.
Right.
And there's like I said, just throw in your Julie Cruz album,
yeah,
and get into the weird state of mind to go through the mind of David Lynch.
A little zen, a little meditation, and then let's watch some murders. Excellent. I look forward to this. Again, we will have our panel discussion. Look forward to that with all of our experts, and we will talk about that next week. Brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you have been reading The Republic of Pirates. Arr.
Being the true and surprising story of the Caribbean pirates and the man who brought them down.
So this is a true story about pirates.
This is about a lot of pirates.
A lot of pirates.
A lot of true stories. There hasn't been a lot of books. There's been books that have written about pirates,
mm-hmm.
But they really haven't gone through the history of piracy and this time in life.
You Napster. Know,
think of, that's right, Pirates of the Caribbean. Or
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. So we love pirates. Arr, Treasure Island.
I'm the captain now.
But there was a real life. There was sure. real life pirates from that time. I grew up on the eastern part of North Carolina. Bath, North Carolina was not too far from where I live. So we would go to, we called him Edward Teach, but other people know him as Blackbeard. But in this book, they refer to him as Edward Treach with a TR. So that's very interesting of it says. Growing up in near Bath, you would go and you'd learn the story of where the governor of North Carolina made an arrangement with Blackbeard. He was officially retiring from piracy. He was going
he
to
say it like that.
Yes.
R, I'm retiring. There's a lot of R's in that word.
He had married a local person. He had brought his wealth to the area and his prestige. The governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia found out he was living down there, sent a group of people to go arrest him, and then eventually Blackbeard went back to piracy. Of course he did. What am I saying?
So I went back to what I was used to. I didn't know what else to do. I did too. I love you. I know. Sorry. Star Wars.
Well, the true life was once again about 10 years or so. It was in the early 1700s when this period was. We go through four or five of these pirates, their real life adventures, who they were, where they came from, what the life was at the time. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if you were a poor person who got talked into being a sailor, you had a rough, rough life. Mm-hmm. A third of you would die wherever you ended up going. You would arrive in a port. Let's just say you joined the Navy for, you know, England or Spain or France or whatever country.
Sail the seven seas.
Exactly.
In the Navy.
If you eventually got thrown onto a shipping vessel because you're part of the some company that's going somewhere and getting spices or whatever, you end up getting talked into joining a pirate group. Which is its own set of things. You would arrive in a port. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've been away. Steve's been away for 3 years. Mm-hmm. He hasn't seen his wife. He hasn't been paid yet. He gets paid when they get there, and mm-hmm. everything gets unloaded, I guess. As you're arriving into the harbor, the Navy comes up, just comes to the ship, and just rips you off that ship, and you're off on another adventure. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you're, like, you're stolen off this ship coming into... And you're off to the next one. So you didn't get paid for the one you were just on.
Right.
And you're off doing something else. That's the reason why pirates, by the way, joined. Because you really had so few protections.
Yeah.
Being a person, you could be stolen and taken off on another adventure, promised to be paid, and maybe not.
Maybe not. We'll see what happens.
One of the interesting stories I got from this is, you know, there were shipwrecks, or forced shipwrecks, off of the coast of the Atlantic. So what they would end up doing is getting slaves. And they would tie big rocks onto them. And these slaves were basically free diving into these water to go down to the bottom to pick up these gold bars or gold coin or wow. whatever, or silver or whatever they're doing. Well, you know, half of them would die or a third of them would die. If they were so deep, they would end up having a bell that would send down to them. They'd have air underneath that they would come up and they would breathe and do it. But man, they get the bends sometimes.
Wow.
Scuba diving, a term mm-hmm. when you get too much nitrogen in your blood when coming up and you go through a painful death. Oh my goodness. I mean, it just, this is the story of that time. Thank God you don't live that life.
No kidding.
But for a person who did live that life, it could be very lucrative to you. And do you know the difference between a privateer and a pirate?
No, is this a joke that involves a buccaneer?
No. One would be many countries would hire pirates to do this. If you were a hired pirate, you were a privateer. You actually were serving a mission of one of the countries. If you're not, you're just doing straight piracy. And they would come and ransack areas. Fascinating. Fascinating. Good book. I recommend it if you have interest.
The Republic of Pirates, being the true and surprising story of the Caribbean pirates and the man who brought them down.
Arr.
You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Colin Wordard wrote this.
Brings us to our appetite or app of the week. And, okay, Chip, there's this thing called TV.
What's this thing called TV? Okay. Does it stand for something?
It's a thing that you pay for $100 a month because you have a satellite dish.
Oh.
Yeah. And on Fox, there's a channel called Fox now. There's not just CBS, NBC, and ABC. There's a new one called Fox.
That's where the NFL games are, right? The Bears play there.
I don't know.
Okay.
On Fox, on Sundays, when the Bears aren't playing, there's this show that's been on for 7 years called Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers. Now, this is an animated show.
This is an animated show in the tradition of The Simpsons. As much as I loved The Simpsons for 15 of the last 30 years, maybe 20 of the last 30 years, I love Bob's Burgers. This show is so silly, so childish. It's full of toilet humor, and it makes me laugh every time.
And so... tell me why we are talking about Bob's Burgers.
Because I've thrown a lot of money to them this week.
You did.
I did. This week, they came out with their first music album. It's called the Bob's Burgers Music Album, simply enough, and it is 112 songs from Bob's Burgers. These little incidental little one-minute songs that they sing all the time in the show.
Kind of like Phineas and Ferb used to have music in theirs.
Yeah, it's a lot more incidental than the Phineas and Ferb music. The Phineas and Ferb music was full-on three-minute songs. These are little one-minute little things, most of them involving farting and butts.
Well,
and they make me laugh every time. Every time. It's childish, and it's okay to be childish sometimes. I picked this up through our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, and I actually got the actual plastic disc.
Well,
version.
When you buy music through Amazon, you get the MP3s too.
Right.
So this is kind of a...
It's a twofer, sort of?
Sort of. But you said it's less expensive.
It was $1 cheaper. It was $1 cheaper to get the plastic disc sent to me with free shipping than to just download the MP3s. Excellent. And I have the MP3s as well.
And do you recommend it?
I don't know. I don't know if I can validly...
For some of our listeners.
For those of you who have been watching Bob's Burgers for the last 7 years and enjoy the silly humor of it, I do think that you will find joy in this like I have. Chip listened to it for a few minutes and he didn't understand it.
I didn't roll my eyes.
There's no context to it.
There's none.
If you have no context, these are just fart songs. But if you know the show... The fact that the mother sings a lot of these fart songs is really funny. So you can look into it. You can get, they're a minute long, so the 30-second sample is almost all of the song.
So we're going to have to dig ourselves up from this, Steve. You've gone really, really bad.
All right, let's pretend to be adults and talk about the news now. Brings us to our Now the News segment. There are some cyber attacks sweeping the nation. FedEx, UK hospitals, and Spanish companies have been hit with some ransomware.
Well, a lot of companies have. Mm-hmm. And the software that they were hit with was created by our protector, the National Security Agency.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That is the NSA. And
tinfoil hat on.
So this is the issue on this. There was a patch that was released back in March 14th to Windows machines, mm-hmm. Microsoft machines. If you have a personal computer and you run Windows, mm-hmm. make sure you do those updates, because those people who did not do those updates, mm-hmm. or those companies who delayed doing those updates,
for whatever reason,
their information was compromised. Mm-hmm. And we just listed off some companies whose information was compromised.
Right.
And it was basically, we're seeing more of this type of ransomware.
Yeah, the ransomware, for those of you who don't know what that is, the idea of ransomware is you get a virus on your computer and it encrypts all of your files with a password. A nice little pop-up comes on your screen the next time you go to your computer and says, hey, we've gone ahead and encrypted all of your files for your safety. If you want the password, send us $500.
Yes.
And some companies and some police stations and some hospitals have sent the $500 because it's necessary to get this information back.
Yes. So the point of this is that this is serious business. Mm-hmm. Make sure you update your software.
Yeah. This is.
It doesn't matter if it's your cell phone. Doesn't matter if it's your personal computer. Your tablet, whatever it is, update your software. If you're working for a company and that's not your job to do that, mm-hmm. Then if you're in the IT area, they'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, the IT departments are definitely aware of this and they are definitely updating, but you need to do those updates. Don't skip those updates. The number of people that walk up to me with devices that have 17 updates ready to install and they go, I'll do it later. No, you need to do it now because that is a roadmap to the holes in the security. The bad guys see that patch update and go, oh, there's the problem, and they can get right into that. So do those updates. Do yourself a favor. Also do yourself a favor of watching John Oliver on HBO. He is fun, interesting, and this week very poignant.
Well, he talked a little bit about the FCC and the net neutrality bill that's going to be reintroduced.
Mm-hmm.
Our point on this is it's not John Oliver that's a story here. It's net neutrality seems mm-hmm. to be the issue. This is a very complicated issue.
Very.
But let me explain it to you the best way I can.
Okay.
Let's just say that we have a couple companies that are going to use the internet over your cell phone or use it over your internet service provider at home. And one of them is a big company. And for my example, this is not true. Just for my example, let's just say it's Amazon versus everyone else.
Okay.
And Amazon has paid your internet service provider to only put traffic towards Amazon. If it went to something else, it would, you know, for some reason it would not work properly. It would slow down and make it unusable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Frustrating at least.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use the same type of scenario. Once again, this is not true. Let's just say that, you know, Netflix said, hey, listen, if you go to any other service that's not Netflix, we'll slow it down. Yeah, the internet service provider
mm-hmm.
will slow it down, make it not work properly,
mm-hmm.
lots of skips or whatever it is. Now, the same note could be to these internet service providers, to Amazon or to Netflix for this, where they say, if you don't pay us extra money, we'll make sure your stuff skips or doesn't work properly or whatever.
Or your competitors will get to the customers faster and better.
Okay, so mm-hmm. what we're trying to prevent, or what the idea behind this, is that data should all be able to move. Basically, it gets lined up and moved equally across all platforms.
Every bit should be equal is the idea of the internet.
And what we want, because you're a consumer, is for the cream of the crop to rise mm-hmm. because it's the cream of the crop.
Because of
not
competition.
Because Google has forced it to come your way.
Because of equal competition on an equal level playing field.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Yahoo of yesterday, mm-hmm. which was the latest, greatest over AOL of the yesterday,
mm-hmm.
The current one is Google.
Yes.
And so, you know, there could be something that's better in the future that comes that's better than that. And we want to take advantage of it. We don't want to be held back because of some rules that were put in place
mm-hmm.
that prevented that competition from rising.
And this, again, is a very complicated issue. We haven't talked about it too much on the show because it is very, very deep. That's the shallow end of this conversation.
Sure, sure.
You should really be aware of what's happening with this debate. That's really all we're trying to say with this. We're not going to go too in-depth here.
Well, let's get to the next part of this.
The next part of this conversation is how we're going to pay for broadband communication.
All right, so we're having some real issues because you're buying your television, or I'm sorry, some people are buying cable television.
Not me.
Some people are buying satellite television, mm-hmm. and they're bundling it with their internet service provider.
Correct.
And so what's happening right now is in most communities, there's only one provider. We're lucky in our area. We actually have two providers.
Well, we have a cable provider. We only have one cable provider.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a telecom provider, AT&T.
Sure.
And then we have the possibility of getting satellite information as well.
Well, and they all work a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But the real challenge of this is that we're looking at something that could be considered almost a commodity. And since there's not a competition on this commodity,
mm-hmm.
we don't get the best service. So if you think of companies that are usually rated as the lowest service,
mm-hmm.
you can think of companies like Comcast,
mm-hmm.
Time Warner,
AT&T.
Okay. It doesn't, mm-hmm. it's just whatever your local internet service provider television company is.
Right.
Is usually rated pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
With the pricing of television, with the competition heating up,
mm-hmm.
with Sony's View, with YouTube television, with Hulu's version of television, Sling TV, all those going over your ISP, your mm-hmm. internet service provider, this is going to become more and more of an issue where they're going to push the price of the internet up and push the price of the television down.
Mm-hmm.
And so there could be some real challenges with this. We need to follow this.
Yes.
You need to be aware of those as it comes available. We don't shop for our internet and our television every day. But, you know, that's going to be when your year is up or your 2 years is up. At that point, you need to really shop around and find mm-hmm. out what's going on in your area at that time.
Speaking of every year, Microsoft has their conference every year. This is the Build conference, where all the developers for Microsoft products come together and Microsoft shows them all the wonderful things that Microsoft is going to give us in the next year.
Line up some interesting things from this conference.
Okay, I'll go through these really quick. I swear to you, I won't dwell on these like I have all week in class. Number one, Cortana, that's Microsoft's AI, the voice assistant.
The Siri of Microsoft.
Yes, that is going to walk into your house soon in the body of a Harman Kardon tube called the Invoke.
So it's going to compete with Google Home. It's going to compete with the Alexa with from Amazon.
And we hear word that Apple's going to come out with something for Siri soon, too.
That's right. Siri will eventually understand. Siri will be priced around $500 or $600.
Right. That's coming. Intel and HP are going to make their own versions of that with that Cortana base soon, probably for, I don't know, the fourth quarter of the year.
You mean Christmas?
Oh, that's when people buy things. One of the more interesting things, and I'll try not to dwell on this. One of the more interesting things that they showed us is what they're doing with machine learning at Microsoft.
What is machine learning?
The idea of a computer can look at a situation using a camera, using a photograph, using a video, and it can identify everything in that photo, in that camera, can tell you where your keys are because you left them on the table. Instead of you having to search your house like you do now, you could pick up your phone and search your house.
Imagine this, though. You think of an interior designer using this. They come in and take a photograph of something and go, I like this. And they can say, oh, well, this was made by this group, and this was made by this group. And we've got this is how much it costs, or these are the knockoffs, or whatever it is.
This is amazing technology. And terrifying. This is terrifyingly amazing and amazingly terrifying. They applied this to filmmaking. They gave us a new program. It's coming out in the fall. It's called Microsoft Story Remix, where you can take all of your photos and videos.
Wiki.
That's right. Take all of your photos and videos, and it can automatically, without you doing anything, make a film out of those pictures. It's terrifying.
Oh, it's awesome. All right, so there's some other things going on. Let's just say that I'm giving a speech in some country that doesn't speak the mother tongue of English.
Let's say that we're turning into a global economy, and there will be a time when you will be talking to somebody who does not speak the same language as you sometime in your future. They have given us real-time translations in both PowerPoint and Skype. If you are speaking English, it can give subtitles in
Chinese, in
60
Spanish.
Different different languages.
Latin.
Hungarian, which is one of the hard ones, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah, oh yeah. Trust me. Trust me. When my relatives from Hungary send us an email, we're not quite sure what they meant.
So if you were living in Greece, they could really say it's all Greek to me.
That's right. This is amazing technology. The demonstration, it's in our show notes. You can go in. The young lady is speaking Spanish in a normal Spanish rate, and at the almost identical rate, words are coming on the screen in English, and another gentleman has his phone, and the words are coming onto his screen in Chinese characters.
That's amazing.
It is absolutely stunning what we have in front of us.
Universal Translator right there.
It's right around the corner. The Universal Translator will change the language verbally, and we're not there yet. This is just subtitles.
It's coming.
It's around the corner. Microsoft has rebranded Windows Holographic to Windows Mixed Reality. We've talked a little bit about the HoloLens that is still on the horizon.
Is it
here.
A blue pill or is it a red pill?
Oh boy. We are getting into Star Trek. We're getting into The Matrix. We're getting into all the science fiction stories, and it's right on the edge. We're going to get there sooner than later. This summer, they're taking pre-orders for a virtual reality device. Two of them, actually, HP and Acer, are releasing virtual reality devices based on this Windows mixed reality, and they're priced around $300.
Oh, that's a good price.
That's a great price. And those will be available on the shelves for the fourth quarter of 2017.
Tell me about a Microsoft engineer doing something great.
There was such a touching story. The first day of build, they are talking to all these people who are developing, and they're saying, we together can change the world. And they gave us a great story. It's called Project Emma, and it's a young lady named Emma who has Parkinson's disease, and she's a graphic designer.
Now, if you've ever met a person with Parkinson's disease and watched it progress, it's really, really tough because... One, they end up losing control of their muscles. Mm-hmm. So early in the morning, you may be fine. But as the day progresses and you tire out, you start shaking and
uncontrollably.
Shaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually, I mean, it affects your ability to communicate. You're talking.
Because that's all muscular.
Oh, yeah. and it's really, you can just see the frustration in a person's eyes as they're just trying to communicate. Now, this is something that's basically counteracting that shaking.
Yeah, this is a very touching story. I really highly suggest you go to our show notes and click on this and watch this story. It is a beautiful story about what we can do with this technology, how we can make life better.
At the end, she says, I signed my name.
She signed her name, and she's in tears because she hasn't been able to do that in such a long time.
All right, give us some more good news.
More good news. Tesla is getting into the solar business. They acquired SolarCity, many years ago. Other Elon Musk company, and they are going to give us the solar roof that we've been talking about, and it's cheap, Chip. It's cheap.
Well, it's never cheap. But the point of this is they've come out with a price, so mm-hmm. you can really know what you're looking at as far as pricing is concerned. Now, if you had a 2,000 square foot home
mm-hmm.
And your roof would cost about $50,000.
Okay.
Now, for a roof on a 2,000 square foot home, assuming it's a regular home, you know,
using
that makes
standard asphalt.
Yeah, I
shingles.
Would say. What are you thinking? 17,000.
Yes, something like a third of this. So this is something like triple what you would associate with a standard asphalt roof today.
Now, it also comes with your battery and stuff like that. So your solar roof's going to be collecting ultimately electricity and storing it, and you'll be able to use it. But the initial upfront dollars is about $50,000 for that. Our homes will be a little bit more than that. My gut says if you were building a home,
mm-hmm. different story.
Then the one your home would be designed properly for this,
right.
maybe optimized for it, and you just roll it into the price of your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for all of us, we probably have to get a second mortgage or take out a new mortgage to put this on.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it seems, you know, not quite right there yet, but man, right there.
Right around the corner.
Something you could consider, because this same $50,000 roof, they're saying over a 10-year period, you could get $60,000,
mm-hmm.
$70,000 back in savings
right.
of using electricity. So, you know, you're kind of paying it back, but we have to recognize this is subsidized
mm-hmm.
when you're purchasing it, your purchase price. That's not the real price of it.
Right.
And you subsidize it to build this company.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's really hard to see what the real price to the public would be.
And there's so many questions, too. I mean, is this going to be reliable for 10 years out in the weather? You know, hail? What's going to happen with this?
And that's a good point. So we live in an area that we get hail once in a while. Mm-hmm. And if they get damaged, how easy is it to get up there and replace a tile? If you live down in Florida, you know, you could go through a 10-year period where not having a hurricane come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then have a period of time where the hurricane comes through, you know, every couple of years.
Right.
You know, is Florida, this sunshine state, this state that would be ideal for this,
mm-hmm.
Is it going to be a place that you're going to actually be able to insure it?
Yeah.
Because that's
right. And then the cost of that may roll into this conversation, too. There's a lot of question marks with this technology, but it's still exciting.
If you lived in Arizona, if you lived in Nevada, if you lived in, you know, Utah.
Seems like a natural.
Maybe a no-brainer type of thing. For us, this is right on that.
Yeah, give it 10 years. Maybe kinda, 10 years from now.
It's kind of like buying an Apple computer.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy a computer for $600 or $700,
mm-hmm.
or you can buy an Apple for $1,200. Do you spend the extra
It's the whole hybrid car, electric car debate. Do I want to pay for gas or do I want to prepay for the cost of operating this vehicle?
Yeah, there's a lot going into this decision. Yep. And it's something that most of us are going to want to watch.
Yeah.
Because especially the survivalists of us out there.
Get back to survivalists.
So you can talk about that next week, Steve, your love for survivalists.
Yeah, I okay.
I'm teasing.
Good, because I had no answer for that one. I don't know, Chip. Speaking of survival, I think we can survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can, as long as the sun is still shining and I have my tinfoil hat. If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes. And this week, here's your assignment. Your assignment is to go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Give us a good review if you like the show. If there's something about the show that you love, write it down.
It helps us out.
It helps us out. It gives us a little bit more.
It helps people find us.
Yeah, people want to find us. The government, too. No, you can go to Stitcher. You can go to TuneIn Radio. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Google Play Music, so your Google Home can play us. We're everywhere. We're all over the place. You can find us. You can find all the information that you need. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.